This is Embracing Change with Lakrita Bowman and Jennifer Osborne. Welcome back to Embracing Change. I am Jennifer Osborne here with Lakrita Bowman. We're continuing on in resetting our beliefs. And in this episode, we're going to ask a really challenging question. Why have you stayed so long in that mindset? So think about a mindset that you're in as you're considering your beliefs. Why are you staying in that? Ask yourself that question. When were you first aware that you needed to ask yourself that question, Lakrita? Like, why am I staying in this mindset?
I'm such a thinker anyway. I'm a contemplator. I contemplate on everything I do, and I think that came from my survival skills. It really heightened my survival. My survival skills heightened my ability to concentrate and or either really contemplate on what I'm thinking and trying to always think five people ahead or five thoughts ahead of everybody else.
Yeah.
So I think when I got to a place, and I'm not even going to say I got to this place as much as I was invited, and I said this on the last episode, to when God, you know, sent his spirit through the Holy Spirit to talk to me. I tell people all the time he was never talking to me. He was talking in me. He was talking to me about him in me. It wasn't never me he was talking to. I think that there comes a time where we get examined, whether we're realizing it or not, that there is a time of examination, investigation, and evaluation. And I believe that day when the Spirit of the Lord spoke to me, he wasn't speaking to me. He was speaking to me, but he was speaking about me to himself. And when people say, well, what do you mean by that? I just believe that he was checking to see where I was, what mindset I was in. Was there still enough left? You know what I mean? Because I do believe in reprobate minds. We need to talk about that, you know, that you can be turned over to that. In other words, you can have, you think you have all the time in the world to do whatever you want. But according to biblical scripture, which I live by, it talks about a reprobate mind when you are turned over to that meaning. In other words, there is no return. You had a window of opportunity and you've been in that mindset so long that so many opportunities came for you to change it. And you didn't trust in those opportunities, or you rebelled against it or kicked against the brick or the opportunity, that he will turn you over to a reprobate mind. And so the mindset, you can't get away, you can't even come back from it. And there's people I've seen in their lives that I don't even know if they know how to come from that mindset, because they've had opportunities. And I believe in that day of my life in prison, that was happening to me. I do believe that. I was being examined, investigated, and evaluated to see, when I say he was speaking to me, he was speaking through me to me about himself. He was checking on himself to see, is there enough of me remaining in her? Or, you know what I'm saying, that she has not chose throughout her life to quiet me down to the point that even me stirring it myself up in her, can I really bring that, you know, can it come to pass? Because people think God makes things happen for us. No, we choose it. Everything I have right now, I chose it. Now, people will say, well, you chose the man to abuse you. No, I ain't talking about what happened to me. I said what I chose to do. I chose it. I could have spoke up and told on the man that abused me somewhere, even in my own small mind, a childlike mind. I chose not to tell it. And when I tried to tell it, if you read my book, you realize that Mr. Sam set the scenario up to shut me down. I've always been a talker. But some way, somehow, I chose through my trauma to not voice that. And maybe because I felt like if I didn't voice it, it didn't happen. But I acted it out in so many other ways. So, go ahead.
I was going to ask, do you think it's the difference between realizing you have a choice and not realizing you have a choice? Because I think children are not 100% aware that they have choices in certain things like that. And then when you can become aware, once you become aware that you have a choice.
All right.
Well,
I'm going to tell my truth.
Sure.
I believed that even at 6 years old, I knew I had a choice to tell him. And I knew what he was doing was inappropriate. And there was a part of me that, and I've said this to you before, that enjoyed the money he was giving me. There was something about that money that he was giving me that it became our secret. Now, cognitively, I'm sure some childhood person would listen to this and say, but you cannot challenge my experience in my choice. You know what I mean? And in that moment, there it was almost, again, coming back from being rebellious. You know, maybe that in the quietness of my own recesses of my mindset, I felt like I had something on my mom. And so even at, you know, 7 years old, 6 and 7 years old, when Mr. Sam was giving me the money, the dollar bills, when he was fondling with me and then finally having sex with me, there was something about that, whether it was right or wrong or indifference within my own brain or my own mindset, that I knew what he was doing was inappropriate, and I could have said it at any time to my mother, but for some reason I didn't. And then when I got ready to, you would ask, well, what, you know, I had to choose to get ready to, right? Somewhere I had to choose that. And I told Mr. Sam I was going to tell on him. So I chose that. So me to tell him, I'm going to tell on you. And then when we're at the dinner table and I'm sitting there and I say, Mama, I got something to tell you. He don't know what I'm about to tell her. So every way he goes, he's going to block it. So now it became a manipulative game with me and him. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I can't say what someone else felt as a child because everybody's experience is different. I can only share about my experience. And so I have to own up to it even as more healthier I become. I have to go back and remember that time exactly the way it was and not the way I wanted it to be and realize there was choices I made in that scenario. I had, you know, so, you know, I just think that, I don't know. I can't explain it for someone else's experience and mindset, but I can explain it for mine. And this is my truth.
Right.
And so I'm
right.
Not speaking for the world. I'm speaking from my experience. So, yeah, I think I had a choice. Even after the traumatic experience, there was choices that I was making. And to be totally honest, because of those mindsets, it created me to have even more manipulative choices throughout my life. You know what I mean? I just built on, as I was saying, I was always a contemplating thinker as long as I can remember. And I pretty much have a good memory. And so I can remember experiences down to 4 years old. And so, and people say, are they strong? Oh, they're strong memories. I can see them. So I didn't forget them, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, I can definitely attest to your great memory and that you are a very strong thinker. So,
yeah. So that's why I think that mindsets, you know, it comes into going back to what we were saying about wisdom. You know what I mean? I'm going to talk about, you know, like wisdom. I'm going to talk about morality in this one, and I'm going to talk about concentration. Because I think that in order for us to, you know, when you look at the Bible, and as I was saying, God was speaking to me about, you know, he's speaking to me about me, but he was also speaking to himself in me. That's the wisdom of God. You know what I mean? And Solomon, if you look in the book of, you know, Solomon and just Proverbs and all that, that's all wisdom. He said, you know, when God asked him if you can have anything you want, he chose what?
Wisdom.
Wisdom.
Yeah.
I wonder why he would choose wisdom. Why do you think he chose wisdom?
Just speculation. I think maybe he saw where his father had failed at certain points in time, maybe making choices that weren't so good. So I think he might have wanted wisdom to be able to lead people correctly and cleanly the way God wanted him to.
See, I think wisdom makes you wealthy.
You think he was looking for wealth?
I think that he was looking for wealth not just in money, but in everything you just said. Because wealth is not money. Wealth is the ability to make a decision and count all the causes and look at all angles. Whether it was
That's
the two
true.
Mothers with the child. You know, if you look at Proverbs and all the things he says, you know what I mean? The word of God in Ecclesiastic, there's a time and a season for everything. Solomon was wise. He wanted wisdom because he wanted wealth. And wealthiness, we have calculated wealth in this world and in this generation as money.
Oh, yeah. It's,
and
it's
he
like
saw
everywhere.
It. He saw it as being able to obtain anything and be able to make decisions about everything. That's the way I see it.
Yeah.
So he chose the very thing that was priceless. Because wisdom is going to cost you everything, but it's priceless. And once you obtain it and you have it, there's not nothing that can be withheld from you. So your whole mindset changes when you have wisdom. So when you ask me starting this, when did I remember, you know, that I wanted to change my mindset? I'm just saying first I had to go back to the six-year-old little girl that played the games and deal with her. Because though I was 32 years old, I don't think I really came into a real awareness to want to change a mindset until I realized that the one that I had was not working anymore. And it was getting me to places I didn't no longer wanted to go. But I had to dislike the thing that I had become comfortable with in order to want to change it. So my last prison stay was the most uncomfortable stay I had ever had. So I believe life became uncomfortable. See, a lot of times we don't like to change something until we no longer can control something. So once we lose control of it, we therefore want to change it. I no longer was controlling my prison stays. I really actually saw the barbed wire. It's always been there. Why did I just see it now? Something was awakening in me. And I didn't see that barbed wire before I had that experience with God and the Holy Spirit. It was after that. So my eyes, as I talked about in the last podcast, I start seeing different. Then I wanted to want different. And then I had to participate different in order to obtain different. So I can only give you what I, you know, my experience. And so wisdom to me comes from the right view, the right intentions, the right speech. So I feel like Solomon wanted to see things from the right view.
Yeah.
Then he wanted to be able to have the right intentions. And then he wanted to be able to speak the right thing. That's wisdom. And that's what, you know, most of us, you know, want, I hope, is that, you know, we can see things from this view that's right and not a skew view or not a faulty view. You can't change your mindset unless you have a right view. And somebody could challenge to say, well, what's right for you is right, not right for me. Well, I think there's a solid right. I don't care what nobody say. There's a line that's drawn to right. And I think the reason that the world has stoplights and all the other things and have all the policies and procedures in the world is because they know in our own, left to our own devices, we'll come up to what's right on our own. And most of us are doing that now. And the world is in chaos. So I do think wisdom brings a right view, you know what I mean? And I think it brings a right intention and it brings right speech. It says be quick to listen, slow to speak. When wisdom, you know when to say, what to say, how to say, who to say it to, when to be quiet, how to be quiet. And just because you're not speaking don't mean you're quiet. It's just how you posture yourself.
Yeah.
That's what wisdom does. So I think the three things of wisdom. In order to change a mindset, you got to have the right view, your right intentions, and the right speech. You got to be, who's talking to you? I think you talk to you more than anybody talks to you. I know I talk to me more than anybody talks to me. So what am I telling myself? What am I saying to myself? What am I believing about myself, about the situation, and how am I concurring with myself for the outcome to get the right view, to get the right intentions? That's wisdom.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really important to tell yourself the truth. That's the only way you counter.
That's it.
Fear and anxiety is with truth. And, you know, it's kind of a funny detail. They say you really understand a language when you dream about it. Like mm-hmm. when you really get something, you can dream in that language. And I realized that my self-talk, I've tried to be very careful about my self-talk, telling myself what God thinks about me, not what I think about me. Like in years past, it's always been, oh, I'm stupid, because that's what I heard a lot. Oh, you're just stupid. Or I can never do anything right, a million things. And I've worked really hard to just change my self-talk to be what God says I am. And I had a dream where I said to someone in my dream, oh, I'm really stupid. And then I went, no, I'm not. I'm bright. I'm smart. I know how to do things. God made me smart. And I woke up and I was so happy because I realized that my working on my self-talk was working, because I was literally dreaming about it and correcting myself in my dream. And I was like, yes, that's so good.
Well, it's because dreams are subconscious. And if, whether we believe it or not, our awakening hours are consciousness. Our dreams are subconscious. And when you look at sub, if you look up into the word submarine, it's something that's underneath. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So sub means underneath, like a sub basement. It's not something you automatically see. So your subconscious is your dream. So it's underneath what's really conscious. And so you've been telling yourself from your consciousness, you've been speaking to your subconscious. Your subconscious is also the heart of a man. So it goes into what I'm getting ready to talk about next, which is morality.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Your morality is what you do when you talk about right actions. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And you talk about right livelihood, how you want something, how you want to live right. And then the morality of, you know, your right effort. The reason I'm doing this is because it's the right thing to do. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And so if you're telling yourself, you're telling your subconscious who you really are, when you dream, your real who you really are can speak to your conscious. So you have that interaction because you've planted seed in the right action in your life, in your livelihood, and then also you did it in the right effort. You did it. You just kept telling yourself. And I think a lot of times we have morality principles, and it's the measure of actions the systems use to conduct your behaviors. You know, it's like, what do you use to conduct your behaviors? What are the systems? You know, when I'm trying to make a really decision, my first thing is to submit to God and say, Lord, I know I see it from this perspective. Meaning, even if I think it's the best, and let me give an example. Okay, like right now we're doing some resetting in our ministry about how the more excellent way. I've made some decisions through the will of God that I know now that I am a servant of the Lord. I am not responsible for the outcomes. I'm responsible for the input. So if I posture myself and use my morality and my right actions to say to the Lord, I'm not responsible for the outcome. If you give me something and I believe that this is the way to go, I'm going to keep heading that way until you either direct me different. And people will say, well, is he going to come down from heaven and tell you? No. There is systems in place, whether it's through people, places, or things or patterns that come. And I think that, you know, when you know that you are going in the right direction, there's something that comes to confirm it. There's a confirmation. There's a peace. I use the system of peace for me. As long as I continue to move in that direction and I have peace about it, then I continue in that direction. I believe that when I'm no longer having peace, and people will say, well, what does that look like for you? Well, peace for me looks like there's no interruptions, meaning there is no interference. Do you find it's not difficult? It just comes natural. You know, people have been asking me lately because I've been in this season, I've been doing a lot of different things, right? In different ways. Now, before I even took on the working a shift, I'm working a shift now. But before I even took on that shift, I told the Lord to confirm that I was supposed to do it. Because I know I'm capable of getting someone else to do it. And yet I realized that when there was no interference and he did not move and say, do it this way, or nothing else came up, I felt like I was supposed to do that. That was my, and since I've been doing this shift, and let me just say, the shift I'm talking about is working an actual shift in the ministry, meaning putting my feet back in the ground. My son called it getting back in the field. So I'm working the field. I'm in there. getting my hands dirty again in a different way. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I'm in the field pulling the weeds off. I'm back in the field again. And so the difference is that I now know why I'm there. Let me tell y'all why I'm there. Because I had apprehensiveness to going back in the field because of who I have been before in the field. No, let me explain that a little different. The way I am such a perfected person in a certain perfected way, I like order. And when I am in something, I like to see it a certain way. I have a vision of seeing it, and this is the way it should go. Before, when I would be in the field working the shift or being in the ministry every day or working in it in a way that I'm present, I would see so many things that I thought could be done different. But really what I was saying, I think that they could be done my way. I'm back in the field, and now I see the same things, but I don't think that way. I just realized that they're being done this way because somebody else is doing them. And the way they're doing them don't make it wrong. It just makes it different. And so I'm not in it to judge it. I'm in it to hold it and see it and not be able to judge it to the point that, and I'm getting ready to get real naked now, that it doesn't have to be my way. And the more that I release it back to God, because I am not the outcomer, I am the inputter, and I turn it back over to who it belongs to, I realize I'm not responsible for it. I am just to do the best that I can with what I have and then hold other people accountable to do their best, but not necessarily to do it my way. And so now I realize being back with my feet on the ground, I'm not that person. And I wouldn't have known that, so that's where my peace comes in. If I wasn't able to step in it, and all I could do was stay away from it and believe that I had changed, I would never know that that part of me was different. So to step in it and now know I'm not who I was, that I am really relinquishing control, that this ministry belongs to Lucreta, because it never did belong to me. It always belonged to him. So that mindset is changed in a great way, and it brings me peace.
Probably makes you want to celebrate on some level, doesn't it?
It does.
The change?
It does.
Yeah.
It does.
It's like rubber meeting the road. You can actually see all of the...
The fruit?
The fruit, yeah. I was thinking of something growing, and yeah. Yeah,
for
sure.
I can see the fruit of the labor. I can see the fruit of the willingness to want to be different,
yeah.
The relinquishing, to realize I am just a steward, I'm not an owner.
Yeah.
I'm all of that.
Wow.
So just being with my feet back in the ground, being present in it every day, and a lot of my concerns about myself was that if I go back in, will it pull me back into being someone that I don't want to be? And the Lord showed me, no, I need you to go back in because I need to show you you're not that person anymore. Mm.
That's so good.
You wouldn't have known that you chose, Lucreta, not to be that person. It wasn't forced up on you. It was something you believed that needed to be changed within you, and you gave the change a chance. And now let's go back in and let me show you the change is real, because it's in your feet. You're able to see something that, and I'm going to give you an example today. I talked to a young man, and it goes back to as we're writing the new principles. Not really rewriting them, but really restructuring them different, I realize how much my voice matters in that ministry. Because I am the one who can tell someone why we do it this way. So I had a situation today just before I came up, and he was a new guy, and I was telling him about the program fees. And he has about, I don't know, about $3,000 on him, you know, and he gets unemployment. And so he said to me, well, I thought that we didn't have to pay program fees for 30 days. And I said, why would we say that? And he's like, well, I'm just saying somebody said it. You know, I said, okay. I said, but now you're talking to me. And I said, who do you say I am? That's what I said to him. Who do you say I am? He said, you Miss LaCrita. I said, and what does that mean? He said, you was the one who founded the program. I said, so now you're talking to me. I said, let me explain to you why the program fees are really, not that we need them, but they're really necessary for you. I said, most of our lives, we've manipulated, worked the system, tried to get what we want for free. I said, anything worth having for is worth paying for. I said, when I ask you about these fees, now everybody else may be heeing and hawing around you, but I'm going to be direct. I said, I'm not afraid to ask for what I believe you rightfully would want. If you came in here to change, then paying those fees should not be anything. You'll get money again. But what you come in to get here is priceless. And it's going to teach you how to get money, but it's going to teach you how to keep it. But it's going to teach you how to not only get money, but get your life. I said, so paying fees is nothing, but you have it. You got an income coming in. And if you go to the principal, I said, do you have a binder? He said, yes. I said, well, did you look at the binder? I said, because under program fees, it tells you who pays and who doesn't. So it doesn't matter what somebody else said. It's already written. So then he goes on. He said, well, I was going to pay my, now here you go. I'm going to pay my storage fee, and I'm going to pay and get me some cigarettes, and I'm going to pay my car insurance. I said, so, and all of those things are good. See, you're going to pay for what you want, but you ain't going to pay for what you need. You need to be in this program, and I'm asking you to pay your fees. Now, my question is, are you going to pay them? And he looked at me, he's like, yes, ma'am, I'm going to pay them. And he did. And this is what he said when we did it. He gave me the fees. And then he looked at me. I said, we good? He said, no, we good. He said, you know what it's like for a man to be disconnected with his money. I said, yeah, I do. I said, none of us really like spending it. If we could live in life free and still get what we want, we all be doing it. But that's not how life is.
That's right.
And he looked at me. He said, I know, Miss LaCrita. So my point is that what that did for me in that moment is I wasn't going to do a lot of heeing and hawing and fighting him. I'm going to tell you the truth, and I'm going to let you choose. And I hope you choose wisely. And then I hope you choose with morality. Because then we go to the next thing that talks about concentration. Because I want you to choose with concentration. And concentration says that not only do you it's the right mindset. It's being mindfulness. It's having, the right mind, being rightfully mindful. Just be mindful of what you're doing. That's what concentration is. It's mindfulness. So you can't change your mindset unless you have some mindfulness. Then it talks about concentration for me is like, just having the right concentration. You know, if you look into concentration and what it means to be focused, to be present. To be aware, just have the right awareness. We really can't do five things at the same time well. Something is not getting all your attention. So do one thing at a time. Just do one thing. So right now, if that young man is here to change, do that. Don't try to do five other things because you're going to get distracted with the other four trying to do the one.
Yeah, it'll be totally divided attention.
It will be totally divided. And you can't, so you have to have concentration and focus and be mindful. So in order to really have wisdom, you got to have morality. For me, that's for me. Out there, listeners, if it's something else for you, praise the Lord. But for LaCrita, my morality mindset has to change. My concentration mindset has to change so I can gain the wisdom mindset. I want a mindset like Solomon. I want to be able to make rightful decisions. I want to think it through. I want to feel it through. I want to weigh it out. I don't want to just think about me. I want to think about how it involves and how it affects everybody in the whole situation. And we don't have to be so quick to make decisions. And I think there's times that you shouldn't make decisions. I think that there's times emotionally you shouldn't make them. You shouldn't make changes. You should always be willing to weigh out the cost. What is it going to cost you? Not just for today, but what is it going to cost me possibly a year from now?
Yeah.
And I was talking about the reset of this ministry. All of the stuff is happening exactly the way it should be. Me going back in on the floor in the field, as my son calls it. You know what I'm saying? Me being able to take my time to hire the right people and to be focused. It has taken me a year to really reposition almost just four or five shifts, you know, working shifts where we have discipleship coordinators that work the shift of the day-to-day ministry of the ministry with the program. But I don't care that it's almost took me a year, because I'd rather it take me a year, because I'm not looking for today. I'm looking for a lifetime. I'm looking for people who is going to commit to more than 6 months or 3 months. I'm looking for someone who says, this is what I'm called to do. This is what I'm called to be. We had an incident today where one of the participants slapped the key out of a staff's hand and then called him all kind of names. And like the staff said, the team said, you know, he said, you know what? It took me everything I had to not react. But I knew that this person is sick. But it still doesn't define that this person is not a good fit for this program. And I think, Ms. Lucreta, you ought to consider that, because this disrupts the whole day. You know what I said? That's the person I want on my team. And it's the one of the newest staff. And they wasn't ashamed to say that I don't think he is good for us. And he's going to disrupt this whole place. And it reminds me of what Zeke said to me. You want people on your team that'll stand up and say, we can't serve everybody. And this spirit comes to distract us.
Yeah.
And it comes to make us work harder. It's okay that he knocked the keys and slapped my hand and called me all kind of names today. But why should we allow this to be the acceptable rule?
Yeah, you got to have boundaries.
Exactly. You've got to be able to reset your mindset. That God, even if he'll turn you over, going back to a reprobate mind, we are not here to be able to help everybody. And we have got to be constantly on concentration and be aware and focus on those that are come here to help. We give everybody the same opportunity. Don't get me wrong. But after the evaluation time, which is 30 to 45 days, we need to be okay with saying we can't. And I don't know if we've always been that way. And what I saw today, with even talking to a couple of the other team, I could tell that they was willing to still, and they'll be the first one that still try,
yeah,
right?
Right.
And then, but they'll be the first one frustrated at the end. No. Call their parents, tell their parent that today is their 30th day. We are going to give them 2 weeks to try to help him find another place. We will give them a list of other places, but we are not equipped to work with him.
That's a hard decision to come to, but it sounds healthy.
It's very healthy. And too often in ministry, we don't make wise decisions.
Right. Well, that gets back into the measure of truth and love, and you got to have a balance. And too often in Christianity, it's a lot of love with hardly any truth.
And hardly any accountability.
Well, right. And so it's hard sometimes to speak truth. I mean, you got to temper it with love, obviously, but it sounds like the new staff member was tempering it with love.
I think that they was in a place where they was trying to be mindful, because they was talking to old mindset, and that old mindset was saying stuff, and I just happened to walk up on it, and it wasn't really, they were listening. Old mindset was agreeing, but I didn't see the old mindset, the person that was talking to, who had the authority to say, you know, I'm going to take care of this. I'm going to speak to Mr. Creed about that. You know what I mean? They were not doing that. They was just sitting there listening and agreeing with them, but I didn't see a plan of action.
Yeah.
And that's when I came in and said, well, that's, I hear you all, and what I think is that we should use the evaluation process. That's what that phase is for. And then the person said, you know, well, you know, they were both having a conversation. My point was that, you know, when you're dealing with a team, you try to be mindful of everybody.
Yeah.
And when we always want the least of these, we want to be mindful to the participant. But we also don't want the participant to disrupt the atmosphere that we're trying to set. And in this new reset and the more excellent way is to realize, going back to the original conversation, Lakrita, when did you realize the mindset? I am constantly being reminded that my mindset needs to change and that I am not the owner of anything. I am the steward that the owner has given me responsibility of. And I am responsible for the input, not the outcome. And I think the more we get to that point of mindset, the better we'll all be.
Yeah. Realizing we don't really own anything.
Exactly. And that we'll use the three things I talked about, which is wisdom.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? We'll look at that as being, you know, wise. You'll use your wisdom. You'll use your morality. You'll use your concentration to get to a place to change your mindset.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you'll look at those three areas in your life and say, I want to live in wisdom. So I have to look at my morality and my mind, and I have to look at my concentration. What am I concentrating on? What is my morality? What is my moral values? What is my moral principles? How do I get to a place to make me concentrate and then not be willing to change it just to please other people or to please the crowd? We all got to learn that.
Yeah.
Because that's wisdom.
Yeah. Being brutally honest.
Yes. With love.
With love.
And accountability.
Yeah.
That's how we change. But first, it starts with us. My mindset has to constantly be changing.
Yeah.
And I got to be willing to ask myself, how did I get here? And why am I here? And how do I leave this place?
Really good questions. Really, really good questions. All right, well, we will wrap it up there, and we will talk to you guys next episode. Hey there. Before you go, I wanted to share with you a cause that is very near and dear to Lakrita's heart. That is City Gospel Mission. City Gospel Mission has operated in the Cincinnati area since 1924, providing recovery services to those who have life-controlling issues, food for the hungry, shelter for the homeless, youth services, and job services. To find out more about how to give or to volunteer, go to www.citygospelmission.org. That's www.citygospelmission.org. Thanks. You've been listening to the Embracing Change podcast. Music production and mastering by Gone Coastal Productions. Podcast editing and production by Jennifer Osborne. Podcast copyright 2020 by Lakrita Bowman.